the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider. I hope you're finding some way to stay cool on what seems to be a very hot weekend everywhere. But I guess that's no surprise, as it's July, and that's traditionally a very hot time of year. The news headlines in a moment, but first let me tell you about the interview segment where this weekend, once again, I present a special. We will visit Rome's catacombs together. They are among the most venerated places of Christianity and a premier attraction for both pilgrims and tourists. Not only do they represent positively remarkable engineering feats, the catacombs are as well rich repositories of material that, notwithstanding centuries of sacking, have provided us with valuable insights into Christian life, death, worship, and art of the first centuries. Literally hundreds of miles of these underground cemeteries were built on the perimeter of Imperial Rome, because it was forbidden then by Roman law to bury the dead within city limits. So be sure to stay tuned for that special. And now some news headlines. It was a fairly quiet week in the Vatican for the Holy Father and various Roman Curia offices. Pope Francis is on somewhat of a working vacation, so events like the weekly general audience are canceled in July. However, he does pray the Sunday Angelus with the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square, and he had a special Mass on Wednesday this week, as you will see. Sunday, July 5th, in fact, after reciting the Marian prayer, Pope Francis said he hopes a new United Nations Security Council resolution calling for a global ceasefire will be implemented effectively and promptly in order to provide aid for people suffering the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. The call for a global and immediate ceasefire that would allow the peace and security essential to provide the humanitarian assistance so urgently needed is commendable. He said he hoped that this decision will be implemented effectively and promptly for the sake of so many people who are suffering throughout the world. Francis said he prayed that the Security Council resolution might become a first courageous step towards a peaceful future. Interestingly enough, on Sunday, the embargoed copy of the papal remarks at the Angelus that was sent to journalists accredited to the Holy See before the Angelus contained remarks about the situation in Hong Kong. However, the media was informed just before the Pope spoke that he would not be saying that text. The Holy See Press Office Director reminded journalists that embargo means not publishing anything until the Pope actually speaks. If he does not say something, it cannot be published. The embargo was broken by a member of the media, and the papal remarks were eventually circulated. Tuesday, July 7th. The Vatican's Commission for COVID-19 held a press conference in the Vatican entitled Preparing the Future, Building Peace in the Time of COVID-19. The speakers stressed that the coronavirus pandemic has brought to light numerous flaws in healthcare systems around the world, and noted that money spent on weapons can be converted into money spent on aid and health care. In fact, global military spending in 2019 was $1.9 trillion, 300 times the World Health Organization's budget. According to Cardinal Peter Turkson, prefect of the Vatican's Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development and president of the Vatican Commission for COVID-19, there needs to be a globalization of solidarity. While today unprecedented sums are being allocated to military spending, the sick, the poor, the marginalized, and victims of conflicts are disproportionately affected by the current crisis. So far, interconnected crises, health, socioeconomic, and ecological, are widening the gap, not only between rich and poor, but also between areas of peace, prosperity, and environmental justice, and areas of conflict, deprivation, and ecological devastation. On Wednesday, July 8th, Pope Francis said Mass in the Casa Santa Marta Chapel to celebrate the 7th anniversary of his visit to migrants on the Italian island of Lampedusa. Given the health situation, only the staff of the Migrants and Refugees section of the Department for Promoting Integral Human Development attended the Mass. In his homily, the Pope urged Christians to discover the face of Jesus in migrants, refugees, and the displaced who are forced to flee because of the many injustices that still afflict our world today. He recalled the words of Jesus, "Whatever you did for one of the least brothers of mine, you did for me." Francis's July 8, 2013 visit to the Mediterranean island was the first of his pontificate after his election on March 13 of the same year. During the visit, he threw a floral wreath in the sea in memory of some 20,000 migrants who had died while trying to cross the Mediterranean. He also briefly met with and spoke to some young African migrants before celebrating an open-air mass. Also Wednesday, the funeral of Monsignor Georg Ratzinger, the brother of Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, was held on Wednesday in the Cathedral of St. Peter in Regensburg, Germany. He died at the age of 96 on July 1st after being hospitalized in Regensburg, the city where he lived the greater part of his life. His death came just over a week after the Pope Emeritus made a visit to Regensburg to be with his ailing brother. Following Georg Ratzinger's death, Pope Francis sent a personal note of condolences to his predecessor, assuring the Pope Emeritus of his prayers both for his brother and for Benedict himself. During the funeral celebrated by Bishop Rudolf Voderholzer of Regensburg, Archbishop Georg Ganschwein read an emotional letter written by Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI for the occasion. "At this hour when you offer my brother the final brotherly service and guide him on his final earthly path, I am with you," the Pope Emeritus began his letter. He emphasized how his brother was above all a priest, a man of God, and a very cheerful soul. This past week, the Vatican announced that at the invitation of the organizers of the National Pilgrimage, Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin will travel to Lourdes on August 15, 2020, to preside over Holy Mass for the Feast of the Assumption. He had been invited to the shrine before the coronavirus outbreak. Due to COVID-19-related restrictions, the 2020 National Pilgrimage will take place without the presence of the faithful who are sick. They are, however, being invited to unite spiritually with the event and to follow the Mass online. In spite of the altered program, Cardinal Parolin is making the trip to support the Marian Shrine, which has been particularly affected by the current health crisis. It will also be the first official visit outside Italy by a senior member of the Roman Curia since the pandemic began. Well, those are the news highlights, but stay right here with me for our visit to Rome's celebrated catacombs. Have a great weekend and stay cool and healthy. Welcome to the Q&A. I've been asked several times by fellow parishioners in Rome why the liturgical season of Ordinary Time is called Ordinary. There are two periods in the Roman calendar called Ordinary Time. The first runs basically between the January 6th Feast of the Epiphany and the Tuesday before Ash Wednesday, inclusive. The second period begins Monday after Pentecost and ends before evening prayer of the first Sunday of Advent. The time is called Ordinary mainly because it's just that, ordinary, and not part of any special liturgical season, such as Easter. Of course, many feast days and solemnities occur in ordinary time. The Most Holy Trinity, the Most Holy Body and Blood of Christ, the Nativity of John the Baptist, the Most Sacred Heart of Jesus, Saints Peter and Paul, the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, All Saints and All Souls, just a few examples. Weekdays during ordinary time, when there are no solemnities, feasts, or memorials of saints, are called ferial days, F-E-R-I-A-L. The liturgical color of ordinary time is green, symbolizing life and hope.
He is honored by the church as one of the greatest enemies of clergy sexual abuse.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
In his time, St. Peter Damian fought against the many vices of contemporary clergy, especially sexual abuses among the clergy. In 1051, he wrote the Book of Gomorrah that is still considered essential reading for fighting abuse today. He died in 1072.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
check out EWTN's official YouTube channel.
Just follow the link on our homepage at EWTN.com or go to YouTube.com/EWTN.
Watch EWTN's live shows or today's homily from the Daily Mass.
Click the upload button to see our most recent clips.
You can also find all of EWTN YouTube content by clicking the playlist button.
It's all on the official EWTN YouTube channel at YouTube.com/EWTN.
Visit today.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You know, I have never seen women who want to be equal absolutely degrading themselves. And yet the media degrades your nature, your beauty as a woman, your goodness. Let us pray at some point our dear Lord touches their hearts.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. This week, in what is normally Vatican Insider's interview segment, I want to take a look at some of the most celebrated landmarks of Rome, visited by millions of tourists, the amazing, mysterious, yet inspiring catacombs. You may remember that Pope Francis visited the Catacombs of Priscilla on All Souls' Day, November 2, 2019, to mark the commemoration of all the faithful departed with the celebration of Holy Mass. Large numbers of early Christian martyrs were buried in the Catacombs of Priscilla, which was known as the Regina Catacombarum, the Queen of the Catacombs. First, I'll give you an overview of the catacombs, and then we'll look at some of the more famous ones. The Roman catacombs are among the most venerated places of Christianity and a premier attraction for both pilgrims and tourists. Not only do they represent positively remarkable engineering feats, they are as well rich repositories of material, which, notwithstanding centuries of sacking, have provided us with valuable insights into Christian life, death, worship, and art of the first centuries. Because it was forbidden by Roman law to bury the dead within city limits, literally hundreds of kilometers of miles of these underground cemeteries were built on the perimeter of Imperial Rome, along the great consular roads of Ostiense, the Appia Antica or Old Appian Way, via Tiburtina, via Salaria, and via Nomentana. The city's limits, defined by an imaginary line known as the Pomerium, were expanded over time, and as a result, catacombs were also built further and further out. More than 40 catacombs have been counted within a few miles of the Aurelian walls, though only a handful are open today to visitors. Now, to digress for a moment, the consular roads had their own interesting history. The Via Ostiense, which we saw when we went to St. Paul's outside the walls, led to the seaport of Ostia, where the Romans kept their navy. The Appia Antica, still paved in part today with the enormous stones of Imperial Roman times, extended all the way to the Adriatic seaport of Brindisi, where the Roman navy also stationed for its travels to the Eastern Empire, and where today one can see traces of the Appia Antica and several ancient Roman pillars. The road was named for the keeper of the census, Appius Claudius, who began building it in 312. The Via Salaria, heading north out of Rome, was the site of salt quarries, sale meaning salt, and at one time when funds were low, Roman soldiers were paid in salt, a highly prized commodity. What archaeologists discovered over time in excavating the catacomb areas was just how well-ordered and efficient the Christian communities of the first centuries were. The community was, in fact, organized into districts called tituli, equivalent to a modern-day parish. These, in turn, were organized into ecclesiastical regions, each one of which was assigned a burial area outside the city. Evidence of this organization has been found in the catacombs and also in the Liberian Catalogue of 354 that documented in a lively fashion the lives of 3rd-century popes. In some instances, the land used for above-ground cemeteries as well as the catacombs belonged to wealthy families who donated it to the Christian community. Often, a larger portion of the cemetery or catacombs was designated for the donor family, and traces of their burial plots can be seen in the more elaborate tombs and even mini-chapels. Indeed, some of the catacombs have names that were difficult to trace, and it was deduced that the name was that of the wealthy donor. Most of the more well-known catacombs, however, bear the names of martyrs. All underground catacombs were once linked to cemeteries above ground that contained elaborate sarcophagi. Few vestiges of these surface cemeteries remain today, whereas, as we said earlier, there are still hundreds of kilometers of catacombs. While it was thought for a while the catacombs were burial places only for Christian martyrs, exploration and excavations showed that these were burial areas for pagans, Jews, and Christians, in particular the poor. Whereas wealthy or noble citizens could have a mausoleum or burial plot above ground, Jews and Christians for the most part could not afford such plots. Nor did they allow cremation as Romans did. Thus, the only place to go was below ground. Originally, each catacomb was only a very small nucleus of burial chambers. As Christianity spread, and as eventually there were more Christians to bury, the catacombs grew in height, depth, length, and complexity. By the 4th century, most catacombs had developed into an amazing labyrinth of chambers, passageways, altars, and mini basilicas, a veritable necropolis. The Christian gravediggers, in fact, had acquired truly marvelous technical expertise. Galleries were usually dug to a width of 1 meter, that's about 3 feet, to allow people to pass, and to a height of 2 or 3 meters, and wells or skylights were created for light and ventilation. Rectangular cavities, the exact size of the person to be buried, were dug into the walls. The deceased was laid in the cavity, or loculus, and covered with a shroud, usually coated with lime as an easy form of embalming. This was then closed with a lime-coated slab. Occasionally, two bodies were buried in the same loculi. The name of the deceased was then engraved or painted onto the slab, sometimes accompanied by their age, the date of death, and the name of the person who entombed them. Over time, Christian elements were added to some of the tombs, either words or symbols, a dove for peace, a cross, an anchor, signaling a safe arrival. Later, eulogies or descriptions of the person's life or Christian attributes were also added. The burial sites of wealthier people attested to their state of life and were more elaborate. This richer form of burial was known as the arcosolium, and consisted of a more decorative slab, above which was constructed an arch, often decorated with frescoes. The arcosolium was frequently used in the cubicula, the small rooms which opened out from the passageways, a type of family mausoleum. The bigger the cubicula, the greater the decoration. Arches, vaulted ceilings, cornice work, pillars, and frescoes. Sarcophagi can be found, but only rarely. The artwork decorating the catacombs is quite refined in the first centuries. Hundreds of frescoes and mosaics, some still very rich in color, depict biblical scenes and parables. They express belief in the resurrection of Christ and eternal salvation, and teach about the sacraments, in particular baptism and the Eucharist. The deceased are always pictured in an attitude of prayer, and the scenes surrounding them exude serenity, joy, and peace. It is the tombs of the early saints and martyrs that are, of course, the hallmark of the catacombs that are open to the public today, and that led to their great development in the early centuries. Devotion to the martyrs led many Christians to make pilgrimages to their burial places, and that's why we're here today. In fact, those catacombs dedicated to martyrs were, and are, among the most visited and well-preserved. Pope Damasus, Pope from 366 to 384, a great admirer of the martyrs, sought out their tombs and restored and embellished them, ordering many of them to be inscribed in elegant calligraphy with verses he himself composed. Over time, to make room for the ever-increasing number of pilgrims who wished to pray at the tombs of the martyrs, areas were enlarged and small chapels or even basilicas were built. Larger liturgical gatherings took place, however, in the churches built above ground, over the tombs. We saw, for example, how Pope Honorius built the basilica over the tomb of St. Lawrence and over the catacomb of St. Cyriaca. For several centuries, until the end of the 8th century, when pilgrimages began to decline, specific itineraries were even mapped out for the faithful who wished to visit the catacombs and tombs of the martyrs. In time, due to sacking by the Vandals and Lombards, the suburban or peripheral areas of Rome were abandoned, and this included some of the catacombs. To safeguard the relics of saints and martyrs who were in the catacombs, many were brought to Rome and placed in churches. Catacombs fell into general disuse, and for centuries, the precise location of some of them was not even known. Only a few continued to be visited through the Middle Ages. A serendipitous discovery in 1578 of a nuclei of subterranean galleries with magnificent paintings on the Via Salaria led to renewed enthusiasm for the catacombs among historians, scholars, and archaeologists. One scholar, Antonio Bosio, even earned the nickname the Columbus of Underground Rome for his discoveries and subsequent erudite studies. While this led to great works, some less well-intentioned archaeologists did despoil several of the catacombs, resulting in what we see today in some areas: damaged sarcophagi, broken stone funeral slabs, and the like. Fortunately for us, Pope Pius IX set up the Pontifical Commission for Sacred Archaeology in the 19th century, and the work of destruction came to an end. Today, thanks to the February 11, 1929 Lateran Pacts between Italy and the Holy See, the catacombs, by virtue of Article 33, are entrusted to the Holy See, which sees to their exploration, care, and preservation. Of the seven catacombs open today to the public, the three most visited are St. Calixtus, Via Appia Antica 102, St. Sebastian, Via Appia Antica 134, where there's also the Basilica of the same name, and Domitilla, Via delle Sette Chiese 282. The other catacombs open are Priscilla, Via Salaria Nuova, St. Lawrence Outside the Walls, Via Tiburtina, St. Agnes, Via Nomentana, and San Pancrazio, Via Vitellia. St. Calixtus is the oldest of all the ancient cemeteries. All the popes of the 3rd century, with the exception, oddly enough, of Calixtus himself, as well as three bishops, are buried here. It is believed that, because of disturbances surrounding his martyrdom, Pope St. Calixtus is buried on the Via Aurelia in Calipodio. Inscriptions on the various tombs identify them as those of martyrs or bishops. One of the most visited crypts here is that of St. Cecilia. In the niche, illuminated by a large skylight, is a copy of the famous statue by Maderno, depicting Cecilia at the moment of her death. The original is in the Basilica of Santa Cecilia in Rome's Trastevere neighborhood. Behind the crypts of the popes and St. Cecilia is the vast primitive area of the catacombs, with its series of long, seemingly endless intertwining galleries, some as high as 5 stories, the staircases, and 6 frescoed cubicula known as the Cubicula of the Sacraments, where we see numerous references to the sacraments of baptism and the Eucharist. The catacombs of Domitilla contain a number of very large tombs and are, in extension, larger than St. Calixtus. They take their name from the martyr Domitilla, a relative of the Emperor Domitian and daughter of the second consul Flavius Clemens. She died during the persecution at the end of the 1st century. In addition to the endless labyrinth of galleries, the most outstanding feature of these catacombs is the large aisled basilica built deep below the surface. The church is dedicated to Saints Nereus and Achilleus, two soldier martyrs who were later honored by Pope Damasus with one of his numerous inscriptions. The surrounding galleries were demolished to make room for the basilica, built between 390 and 395, whose altar was placed over their tomb. The St. Sebastian catacombs were referred to in ancient documents as the Memorial of the Apostles, as it was on this spot that the Apostles Peter and Paul were first jointly venerated. Their remains had been transferred here from their tombs on the Via Ostiense, St. Paul's, and on Vatican Hill, St. Peter, at a time when they were thought to be in considerable danger of profanation. It must be remembered that many relics were considered in danger for several reasons. Either people simply wanted for themselves some reminder or remnant of the saint or martyr they venerated, or, as was the case with civil authorities, especially those who were against the new Christian faith, it was felt that by destroying a relic, they would destroy the faith of the followers. Some historians believe there was no element of danger involved for the relics of the apostles, but rather that they were brought here simply because it would be easier to venerate the two great apostles together on their feast day in one single location. The oldest calendar of the Roman Church, in fact, gives June 29th as the joint feast of Saints Peter and Paul, adding that this commemoration began in the year 258. Their relics have since been returned to the basilicas bearing their name, and June 29th is today still their feast day. In their honor, a great basilica was built here in the Constantinian period. The devotion to Saint Sebastian, for whom the catacombs are named, developed much later. The tomb where the saint's body had been placed during the persecutions by Emperor Diocletian was enlarged and embellished in the 5th century. 2 centuries later, Sebastian's popularity grew among Romans when, during the plague of 680, many of them prayed for his intercession and were spared. In fact, Romans dedicated an altar to him in the Church of St. Peter's in Chains, near the Colosseum. Today, the saint's remains are in the chapel dedicated to him in the Basilica of St. Sebastian, the first chapel on your left, by the way, and relics associated with his death are in the chapel on the opposite wall. The catacombs of Priscilla, which Pope Francis visited, are in the northern part of Rome on the Via Salaria, the one named for the salt quarries. Some of the most ancient and extensive of all the catacombs, the name comes from the owner of the land, a member of the nobility, as we see from the word Clarissima on an epitaph. Numerous martyrs were buried here, including Felix, Philip, Crescentius, Prisca, and Prasedes, to name but a few. 7 popes were also buried here. Marcellinus, Marcellus, Sylvester I, one of the 11 longest pontificates in history, Liberius, known for building the Basilica of St. Mary Major, Siricius, Celestine, and Vigilius. The upper level of underground corridors is the most ancient of the network of corridors and contains paintings and stuccos of the earliest Christian art with scenes from the Old and New Testament. Noteworthy among the many frescoes is that of the, quote, breaking of the bread, with its references to the miracle of the loaves and fishes, and to the Eucharistic banquet, and also 2 paintings of the Virgin Mary, dating from the first half of the 2nd century, considered the most ancient in existence. In one, Mary is depicted with the child Jesus in her arms and a prophet at her side. In the second, she is seated with an angel in front of her, a clear reference to the Annunciation. I hope you've enjoyed this trip through time at the fascinating catacombs, and when you're in Rome, maybe you'll have a way to listen to this podcast as you walk through them.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.